The following program has been brought to you by Rolling Press, a family-run, eco-friendly printing company. For more information, visit rollingpress.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Episode 78 of The Morning After. I'm Jesse Kiefer.
And I'm Jen Tellick.
Jen, how you doing?
Well, you know, I barely made it out alive this morning. I took quite a tumble on the cold streets of Bushwick. I was jogging, which I do about once a year, and I tripped over my own 2 feet and took quite a spill and was bleeding pretty profusely in front of an entire group of, I'm going to say 20 al fresco brunch diners who looked at me in a panic. And to calm them, my impulsive response was, "Ha, must just be the period, stupids," and then limped on, clutching a hand to a bloody elbow. So I feel great.
So you're doing well, you know, and it's perfect timing to get all beat up because you have a show tomorrow.
I do. 7 o'clock at the People's Improv Theater. Character Assassins is the name of the show. I'm doing a sketch show with two fabulous comedians, Jen Dodd and Tim Gerbach. And it's going to be fun. You guys should come.
I'll definitely be there. Cheering section, maybe a sign. I don't know.
I'd love a sign.
Is that appropriate?
I know you like themed t-shirts, as you're wearing one that reads Breadwinner currently. Maybe you could do a little iron-on action for me. Maybe my headshot.
Who says I can iron? I mean, I just buy the vintage shirt. I don't make it myself.
We've had a great week.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, I was going to say my great week started with getting an A from the Department of Health at my restaurant.
Congratulations.
I've been having total nightmares about it for the last week. And then the day that they came, my chef was like, "Jess, oh, I have like this like terrible headache. I'm like so anxious of this terrible headache." And I'm convinced that he knew they were coming. So I'm going to look to him for any more like fortune telling or...
He's a clairvoyant.
I think he is. I really think so. So
that is the TLC show that I want to produce. Clairvoyant chefs.
Coming to Terroir Tribeca.
You have a gluten allergy. I know that you have a gluten allergy. Stay there. I will prepare your food. But we got to go to the New York Food and Beer Expo with Jimmy Carbone.
Of Beer Sessions Radio.
Of Beer Sessions Radio here on Heritage. And we had a ball. We got to talk to several different brewers. We drank a lot of beer.
And as a person who buys beer for a restaurant, I was really happy to see how many new New York breweries there are, or ones that aren't so new and I had never heard of. And we got to talk to the people at Rushing Duck, which is in the Hudson Valley in Orange County, New York, which doesn't even distribute to the city yet.
Yeah.
And they were awesome. And so you'll hear a little bit from our interview with them. Ethan Long from Rockaway Brewing Company. And then Mr. Dan Kutleski from Empire Brewing Company, which has definitely been around for a while. And he received an award that day. So
he did.
I'm looking forward to hearing that. Jimmy also did a little singing for us. So you'll hear that. But more importantly, in studio, we have Miss Joy Wang of WNYC. She is a producer there, and she created the segment Last Chance Foods, which airs weekly on All Things Considered. Welcome to Roberta's The Morning After.
Hey, thanks so much for having me. It's great being here.
And I'm totally excited to talk to her about what Last Chance Foods are and just things at WNYC and how she got that segment started.
Absolutely.
Speaking of segments, one of my favorites. It's so hard to choose your children, so
I know.
I have to say, you know, it's this one of the loves of my life. Stories from the front of house.
It's your favorite story. It's front of house. It's a front of house.
Now, this is a story that I experienced, and I'm titling it Splitting Checks, Not Necks.
Now, as usual, we have invited the Dame Joan Plowright, the Baroness Olivier, into the studio to read this story. She's become quite a fan of your work, Jesse. I actually was having tea with her the other day at her iguana sanctuary, and she remarked to me how you have become her favorite author. So I thought that was a really great compliment.
That means a lot to me.
Yeah, she's a sweetheart.
Tell her I've been thinking about her as well.
I will. She's actually napping in the corner, so let me just give her a little shake and we'll get it going.
Fantastic.
Splitting the dinner bill between friends, colleagues, lovers, even family is not a hard thing for a server. Sure, a check split between 10 different credit cards on a busy night is worth cursing under your breath. Maybe even worth bitching about over several drinks after your shift. Pain in the arse, yes. Difficult? No. I mean, maybe if you have some archaic POS system, like Squirrel, or God forbid, just a calculator. But for the most part, the machine does all the real work. Now that being said, why in the world do people have to fight over paying the bill? In restaurants all over the God's green earth, loved ones are battling each other for the coveted title of check payer person. There is the classic grab the card out of the server's hand move, only to aggressively replace it with their own. The peaceful corner the server out of sight to discreetly pass off their credit card as if they were doing a drug deal move. There is the pathetic table scramble, a mad dash of hands whirling about, ripping paper, throwing napkins, knocking over drinks, and sometimes even scratching. Often the guest, who did not win in the scramble, will plead with you, saying things like, "I will tip you more if you use my card," or "she tips terribly," or "her card will be declined." And sometimes, only sometimes, you will be threatened. I was working at a rock and roll sushi bar in a desert town I like to refer to as the land of the $30,000 millionaire. I had the patio section that night, which as any seasoned server knows is always the least conducive section to actual restaurant service and sanity. You have to deal with all of the elements, and you are always so disconnected from the bar and the kitchen. It's awful. You're lucky if you make it through a busy shift without a breakdown. As I walked what felt like the length of a football field from the bar to the patio, carrying 8 sake bombs, about 16 pounds of booze, mind you, I was getting close to said breakdown. I had a table of 8 fratty guys, flaunting and bragging about life, jobs, cars, alcohol intake, blah, 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 blah. They were a raucous bachelor party, just lubing it up before heading to the strip club, and had me running my arse off to meet their thirsty needs. To put it delicately, we were not getting along. When the time came to drop the check, all of the boys began to argue about who would pay the bill. To stop all of this spitting and posturing, I introduced the idea of putting all of their cards into a hat and selecting one lucky person to pay the big bill. They agreed, and with a drum roll, I swirled my hand around in the hat and pulled out a card. Relieved that they would soon be gone, I read the name. And no sooner did the last name leave my lips when said check payer stood up from his seat, took one look at me, removed his Oakleys from his frosted-tipped hair, and remarked, "You bitch. You stupid bitch. You knew that was my card." The slur seemed to reverberate throughout the starry night, and the patio went silent. I did my favorite stare and blink slowly, just to really let it sink in for the bro, turned around and swiped the card as his buddies began to shame him. I kept silent, knowing tears were welling up as I threw down his check. Maybe the fight to pay the bill is all about the gesture, not the actual gift. I had no idea who he was or what his card looked like, but I did know I just got a huge guilty tip.
Oh, she's napping again. It always wears her out. She can only do about 3 minutes tops, and then she's gone.
I mean, she really brings the moment in.
She's such a sweetie.
She takes it away.
Thank you, Dame.
We're going to take a break here on The Morning After. We're going to come back with Joy Wang, WNYC Last Chance Foods.
You're listening to Leaving by Dead Stars on the HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
Wake me up when you know, and I hope that
Today's program was brought to you by Rolling Press. Rolling Press is a family-run digital and offset print house that brings together eco-friendly methods, ethical practices, and personalized service. Using environmentally responsible papers, non-toxic inks, and wind power, Rolling Press represents the harmony of traditional craftsmanship and mindful sustainability. Rolling Press offers advice on reducing paper waste and energy consumption, helping you save money and minimize your carbon footprint. For more information, visit rollingpress.com.
We're back here on The Morning After. She's a producer at WNYC. She created the segment Last Chance Foods that airs weekly on All Things Considered. Joy Wang.
Hi, Jesse.
I'm so happy to have you here.
Hi. Thanks.
Now, I have been doing my research, like a good girl, and I've noticed on WNYC that you're one of, I think, two food segments that happens on
that
the show.
That is true. Sad but true fact.
So how did you come about pitching Last Chance Foods?
Well, I actually noticed about 3 years ago when I signed on as a producer at WNYC that there was this surprising sort of dearth of food coverage. And so I proposed this idea that spoke to, you know, my life as being a total slacker and never knowing what's in season and always missing it, and thought, you know, I'm a nerd. Let's talk about vegetables and fruit.
And fruit.
Shake it up a little bit.
So what are Last Chance Foods?
Last Chance Foods, ideally, are foods that are about to go out of season. So I know, for instance, I always miss local cherry season because it's like 2 weeks long. And again, being a slacker, I was like, I would, you know, it would help my life. And potentially, I wonder if it would help a lot of other people's lives to know when they're about to go out of season. So that was the initial impetus for the show.
To, like, be able to rush to Whole Foods and get that $15 bag of cherries. I do it every time.
So you're not eating white tomatoes.
Yeah, exactly.
I do. You know, tomatoes, I feel like, are the food that whose season is known by the most people. It's like everybody knows when tomatoes are in season. And yet I am always the person who decides to start cooking an Italian heavy diet for like 2 weeks. And it's always when tomatoes are at their worst. Every time. I need to listen to your show.
I started buying off-season tomatoes like before, at the beginning of summer, and I've just felt so guilty about it. But I was like, I can't stop. I'm a monster. These are beautiful, and they're grown in Montreal.
Well, I mean, I do feel like people who, you know, I know you didn't grow up in California, but people who grew up in California or on the West Coast, I grew up in Phoenix, like, you always have produce. You always have it. So the idea of seasonality wasn't entirely something that made sense to me. I know you grew up in Tennessee, and that was something you didn't have to think about there, right?
Yeah, I mean, as an American who goes to the supermarket, it almost feels like a God-given right to be able to eat tomatoes any time of the year you want to. And I mean, sure, you can, but it's just maybe the tomatoes in January aren't going to be as delicious, so that's sort of risk you take, I guess.
I mean, I just recently made a tomato sauce with heirloom tomatoes from New Jersey, and my girlfriend was like, why are you cooking with these? What's wrong with you? They taste amazing raw. What sort of lessons have you learned since you've been doing Last Chance Foods as far as it comes to food and farmers?
On a very practical level, I learned very recently how to properly make iced coffee as opposed to just putting my leftover coffee in the refrigerator, which is a total travesty. I knew it was a travesty, but I was doing it anyway. So there are things like that, and then just becoming more familiar with vegetables, like kohlrabi, for instance, makes me feel a little more comfortable using it. And so that's what I hope to sort of get across with the segment, you know, to let people, make people familiar with these crazy vegetables that they find in their CSA or they see at the farmer's market, and through that, eat them.
Wait, I'm sorry, how should I be making my iced coffee?
There are two methods.
Please enlighten me.
The segment was really awesomely titled as well. It's what it's called, Getting Iced, right?
Yeah, Getting Iced, coffee, that is. I think I just went with Getting Iced, but then my editor was like, you might need to clarify that a little bit. And I was like, okay, good point.
What should I do?
You just let it soak overnight for 12 hours. But it's just the ratio of coffee to water is much higher than you would use to make hot coffee.
Sure.
Yeah, so it's like a ton of roughly ground, like French press coffee grounds. In a jar with water overnight for 12 hours, and then you just filter it twice, and then you have like a concentrated iced coffee mixture.
Because I've been icing my French press coffee. I'll take my French press that I make every morning, I'll have half of it hot, and then I'll pour it into a mason jar and put it in the fridge, and by the time I drink it, it's so acidic and muddy that, oh, right, thank you, thank you.
Well, that's kind of the Japanese method, actually. I was going to say, you're not entirely off.
Awesome.
You're not entirely, that's the second method, which is you can brew coffee hot, but stronger than you normally would.
Yes.
And then
add
pour
ice.
It over ice, yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, I think subconsciously I knew I was doing the Japanese method.
Clearly.
Thank you.
Yeah.
For confirming.
Well, and then, I mean, ideally you're adding ice to it so that that can dilute the strength.
Correct.
Essentially. So how do you go about finding guests for the show?
Well, as a journalist, I think one of my strongest skills is being a Google monkey. So I do a lot of Googling, read some blogs, you know, and see what people who are better at living their lives in a responsible, sustainable way are doing, and try to have those people on the show. That's basically how I go about doing it.
You don't just walk through farmers markets and say, hey, can I interview you for WYZ?
I like your bangs. Have you purchased anything today?
What's in season?
See, that's how I would do it. That's why I'm not a producer.
I wish I could do that. Ideally, that's what I would do if I had more time and energy, I suppose. But being the lazy person that I am, I just sit in front of my computer.
It doesn't sound like you're too lazy. You're producing a badass segment.
Thanks. Well, you know, you were saying earlier, it's about the hustle, right? In New York.
Absolutely.
Yeah, if you're not busy, you feel like you're dead or something.
Well, yeah.
Or you're just, but that's actually relaxing. It's not.
Absolutely.
So I guess, you know, we just kind of addressed it in the very beginning of our interview, but why do you think there isn't like an hour-long show about food on WNYC right now? Why? I mean, there's something about music. You know, there's obviously things about media, and
it's a tough balance to strike in general, but I think one of the things that WNYC does really well, being a local station, is covering a lot of local news. Mm-hmm. So our newsroom definitely is where a lot of the station's focus is, quite rightly. And I know that even recently when, you know, the iced coffee segment, for instance, someone posted was like, not another segment about iced coffee. And when Food Fridays was on, there was one commenter who mentioned, like, you're already doing Food Fridays. Why are you doing more food? So I think to some degree it's a reflection of what people want. And there is a strong and understandable demand for hard news stories out there. So, but hopefully there's another, I think Food Fridays is something that will continue and is likely to come back up. And, you know, we'll try and make our food coverage as robust as possible.
One of, I mean, a lot of the segment is kind of like a Q&A interview, but one of my favorites that I listened to was when you went to Murray's, and Amy mm-hmm. was interviewing the cave masters, and you know, obviously on radio it's hard to describe something you're seeing, or you have to be very descriptive, and Amy did it very well. But they were looking at this specific cheese rind,
yeah.
And they saw this mold, like, or these microorganisms, like, moving on it. Like, the mold was moving.
Yeah, it was crazy.
Because you saw that firsthand.
Yeah, it was, we had a microbiologist who was great enough to come down from Harvard to tour the cheese caves.
Wow.
Which, you know, I understand. The cheese caves are pretty awesome. I would come down from Boston for that. And he had a little portable video camera on him that he, like, stuck onto the mold. Onto the cheese rind, and you could see these little cheese mites like roaming around on the rind. And he was joking about how, oh, this is their favorite mold, and every time we see this mold, it's like a little cheese mite bar party, and they get crazy and they just congregate around that mold and have a good time. It was hilarious.
That's wild.
Dancing mold.
Have you had any other experiences like that where you were just like, I can't believe we're catching this?
We generally don't go out into the field mm-hmm. as much as I would like, mm-hmm. unfortunately, just because of time and, you know, logistics. Mm-hmm. But I know we talked to one guy who's like an eel specialist, and he wrote an entire book about eels called, I think, Eels, in some long subtitle.
Naturally.
And I just learned that eels are like these crazy, fascinating creatures, and just got super nerdy and into this like whole, like on wet nights. When eels are migrating, they can actually come out of the water.
What?
And, like, move over the ground and breathe, like, through their gills outside of the water.
Because it's raining?
Yeah,
because
it's, like, moist. It's just, like, moist enough. And they, like, their urge to, like, get back to the Sargasso Sea and breed is, like, so strong that this is what they'll do.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
So, before this, did you ever work in the food industry at all?
Wow, really got me where it hurts. No, I hadn't.
You're lucky. Consider yourself lucky.
Oh no, please. You're one of the few chosen people. You will survive during the apocalypse. We will all just drink ourselves to death.
Did you hear my front of house story?
Well, I'm drinking myself to death having not. So it seems, as a third party, it seems to be a very glamorous and sexy world of food. No, I'm a print trained journalist. So all of this happened because of my love for journalism, I suppose, and storytelling.
And love for food was a byproduct, or just a coincidence.
Being human, I do
consume food
and I enjoy it. Yeah, exactly.
Can you share with us anything that's upcoming on Last Chance Foods?
Well, I book it pretty week to week. To be honest with you,
hey girl,
We're talking about hot sauce soon.
Hot sauce?
Yeah.
Okay. I can count my great passions on one hand, one being Barbara Streisand, two being some really bizarre Swedish and Danish films from the 60s. Mm. Hot sauce is the other.
Excellent.
I'm from the South. I love it hot. I put it on everything. My fiance hates me because I will douse the most beautifully prepared dishes with sriracha and Tabasco. I got into it actually when I retired from the restaurant industry myself this year, but before I did, the gentleman that worked on the line at my last job had grown what they claimed to be one of the hottest peppers that there is. I was like, guys, I love hot stuff. Come on. They were like, no, you can't eat this. You're a woman. And I was like, okay, put it in my mouth. Because at that point I was like, well, game on. So I put the entire pepper in my mouth and chewed it up and then spent about 25 minutes with my head under a faucet sobbing and praying to Jesus.
Oh, man.
So Jen loves hot sauce.
What kind of hot sauce are you going to talk about?
Well, okay, so first of all, I want to say consider next week's segment a shout out to you and your love of hot sauce. You know, let that be the case. It's called Bacchanal sauce. It's a Caribbean-style pepper sauce. So it's not just about the heat. It has papaya and pineapple and tamarind in it. And also this lovely Caribbean culture behind it. So that's the idea.
Fabulous.
Because like Bacchanal makes me think of like Bacchus, like the god of wine. Is there any wine in there?
There is no wine in there. Apparently a Bacchanal is a term for like a spicy, exciting party in the Caribbean. It's also a term for an orgy, but you know.
What an interesting etymological crossover.
I mean, like wine does what wine wants. I don't.
What would you call Johann Sebastian's entire family? Bach and all.
Oh.
Come on, puns for days. That's fabulous. I can't wait to listen to that because this is not a thing that people discuss very often, is the beauty and the art of hot sauce.
It's true.
Ugh.
I'm with you.
I also love hot sauce. So.
Oh, God. What's your favorite?
I have to go kind of classic, and this is a shout out to my dad, which is like Tabasco. I know.
No, nothing wrong with the girl.
And, you know, cooking sriracha because I'm Asian. What can I do? It's what I know.
I will tell you this. I like Tabasco on meat and sriracha on like vegetables or like fatty vegetables, like on anything with avocado or cheese.
Yeah.
Sriracha all day long.
I feel like Tabasco is one of those, like, it's just hot. It's not, I mean, it has like vinegar to it, but it's just plain hot. I need something to be like really like vinegary, oniony, salty, you know, kind of together. I can't do just straight up hotness. So I like some, like $1.99 indie pep. Or maybe the mild, the green Tabasco.
Oh.
My fiance is doing yoga teacher training right now, and she was talking the other day about the doshas, which in Ayurvedic studies is essentially another version of a personality type, right? And there are three doshas, Kapha, Pitta, and Vata. And it's akin to, identifying with your astrological sign. It's like, oh, well, what type are you? And apparently, my type is not supposed to have heat because we're already so fiery and addicted to adrenaline that we're not meant to eat things that are hot. And I was like, girl, if you keep coming home with this information telling me I can't have my hot sauce, this is not going to be okay. She's like, I'm just telling you that as a pitta, you really shouldn't be having that much hot sauce and peanuts. And I was like, just stop talking. Stop it.
I have to spend my life with you. Let me have the hot sauce.
I was going to say, I saw you and I was like, girl clearly needs to take it down on the hot sauce. There's a lot of heat coming from over there.
That's what it is. It's true. I actually used to travel with hot sauce. I traveled with a tiny baby sriracha because you never know what you're going to get.
Was it less than 4 ounces? So you could take
it on the plane? Have little mini bottles. Yeah. I had it. I was given it as a going away present when I stopped working at this at a Thai place in the West Village. They gave me a little bottle of sriracha.
How thoughtful.
Well, I can't wait to listen to your segment on hot sauce and all of the other ones because your show is amazing.
Thank you.
And I think what you're doing is not only important in general, but so cool specifically for that network. And we're both super huge fans. So
thanks.
Yeah. And I really hope it opens the door for more food shows. So that's weekly Last Chance Foods on All Things Considered. Is there a specific time frame that it plays?
It airs usually Fridays during the 5 o'clock hour on All Things Considered, 5 p.m.
Tune in. We're going to get back to you here on The Morning After with our Beer Expo Extravaganza.
This one's called Kill Me in the Summertime by Dead Stars on the HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
Like what you hear so far? Support the network and become a member. Membership helps us bring you the best food radio in the world and gives you access to thousands of dollars in discounts at the sustainably minded businesses that support us. To become a member, visit heritageradionetwork.org today.
We're back here on The Morning After. Jen and I spent a very hot day guzzling beer, speaking very quickly, and we were basically like taken in the wings of Jimmy Carbone of Beer Sessions Radio at the New York State Food and Beer Expo.
If you've never had the pleasure of listening to his segment, you millions of listeners, you should, because he's not only an incredibly learned man, he is one of the most charismatic and jovial people I've ever met, and he was so generous to us, and we went in not really knowing, you know, what our experience was going to be, and he escorted us around the expo and personally curated all of our tastings, which was such a cool experience, and we got to talk to so many young and upcoming brewers that are making the craft beer scene happen here in New York State.
It was fantastic. He was wearing a seersucker blazer. It was probably 100 degrees. Or, well, okay, no, it wasn't 100 degrees, but
he's
like 90 and humid.
Just the cutest and the sweetest. So you're going to hear a little bit from Jimmy. You're going to hear a lot from the brewers. And we're going to take a little listen to what the day was like at the New York Food and Beer Expo.
It's got to be the morning after.
This is Jess.
And Jen.
Of The Morning After on Heritage Radio Network. We're here at the New York State Food and Beer Expo. Let's get a beer.
Hey, so I'm Jimmy Carbone from Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. We're here at a fest that we're co-hosting. It's called the New York State Food and Beer Expo. It's really the New York State Beer Expo. And yeah. It's the first time in New York City. We have 25 breweries from New York State and only New York State breweries. So there's a couple new ones. Long Island is from the east end of Long Island in Riverhead, New York. They're pretty good. They just started making beer, and they have their own brewery, which is really important. A lot of guys start by making beer other places, but now they've actually have their own brewery.
So he walked us around, and first place was Long Island. I mean, it was like a wave. So then we hit Empire Brewing Company, and they are out of Syracuse, New York. And the guy at the head was Dan Ketleski, and he was getting an award for kind of Brewer of the Year, and he's made a lot of moves in the New York brewer scene.
All right, so tell us about this beer. What do we need to know?
Actually, this beer was inspired by Hitachino Nest. During the time when the tsunami hit, Hitachino is one of my favorite beers. So we designed a beer after that, but we wanted to kind of Americanize it a little bit. We use a Belgian yeast strain, and then lavender, honey, ginger. It's called White Aphrodisiac, or White Afro for short, and everything in it makes you horny. Jimmy did this really cool event. Remember? That was awesome.
Yeah.
When the owner of Hitachino came in, we did a fundraiser for the tsunami victims in Japan, and we showcased this beer at Jimmy's Pub. So yeah, it was really cool. So who brought it today? So it's fluffy and fuzzy. I'd like to say that it's kind of like Blue Moon on acid.
Well, you're speaking my language.
It's our version. Yeah, right, exactly.
I would like to get some female confirmation, though, that it is, in fact, aphrodisiacal.
We let Olivia have so much. We know her limit.
She's trouble.
It's a great beer.
Yeah?
It's true to its name.
Okay, good. That's all I needed. All
right. Yeah, I mean, she seems serious.
I'll tell you what's going on today. So Jenny has been the president of the New York State Brewers Association for how many years?
10 years.
For 10 years.
How long has it been around?
I founded it 10 years ago.
So what's the award you're getting today?
Apparently I'm a New York Beer Hero.
Wow.
So I'm getting a New York Beer Hero Award.
So it takes 10 years to become a beer hero?
Apparently. When I opened Empire in 94, there were 6 breweries. There are now, as of Thursday, 135.
Oh, wow.
And there's been a lot of laws passed that allow small breweries to actually open. So we're stoked about it. And it's guys like Jimmy who do events like this that allow us to educate the consumer on what craft beer is all about and what New York State beer is all about. So it's cool.
What were some of the stipulations or the issues that people would have opening breweries prior to?
Well, there was one law which only allowed you to have one brewery in New York State. So guys like Heartland Brewery were only allowed to have one. I at one point had 3, but that was only because I changed the law to allow for that to happen. We recently had a piece of legislation passed that are recognizing breweries as farm contributors, so they're agricultural. And if you think about all the ingredients that go into a beer, everything comes from the earth. So why shouldn't it be an agricultural product? We just got the designation about 6 months ago for farm brewery license. And kind of dovetailing off of the success of the wine industry in 1976, when they allowed for a farm winery license, we now have a farm brewery license. So small breweries are popping up all over the place that are using New York State ingredients. And what does that do? That gets farmers to start growing barley, starts farmers to start growing hops, and it's going to end up ultimately being a win-win for the state.
And it was really cool to talk to him about that because, you know, he could basically see what his work has done by being, you know, at this expo and seeing hundreds of breweries.
Absolutely. A really cool day for him. And some beautiful beer that we drank from him as
Absolutely.
Well.
Absolutely. I didn't feel any different after drinking it, though. The aphrodisiac beer.
Even though I was wearing my see-through shirt.
And we moved on next to Ethan Long of Rockaway Brewing Company out in the Rockaways in Queens. How did you get started doing beer brewing?
That question's often asked, but we come from being home brewers. My first kind of introduction to home brewing was University of Wisconsin food arts class, where we did one of the finals was brew your own home brew. So that was kind of back in the early 90s. And when I first moved to New York, you know, my now wife was a chef, so I was making beer at home. She was cooking in restaurants. And over time, kind of kept dabbling. In the last number of years, Marcus, my other partner, we were making beer out in the bungalows and brewing beer every weekend. And that was kind of the impetus to kind of Rockaway Brewing, hence the name. So.
What is do you have one of your flagship beers here?
The ESB is our flagship, kind of an English-style ale. You know, when I was in college, one of my favorite beers was Red Hook's ESB. Mm-hmm. Which now I find a little bit too sweet, but kind of delved into brewing that when we were doing a lot of home brewing, and I worked on that recipe for a number of years, and we liked it enough that we eventually it became our flagship. People always kept asking for that one. So we do about 4 other beers in addition, but we always keep the ESB on tap.
So ESB stands for Extra
Special Bitter. Everyone gets scared by the bitter part of it, but it's kind of like on the British scale. It's kind of like saying a pale ale here. But ours is a kind of a more malt forward, less hoppy beer.
And after Ethan, we headed over to Rushing Duck, which their beer is actually not even available in the New York City market yet because they basically are 2 people, so they don't have time to
brew
enough.
Yeah, an engaged
beer.
Couple. It was really cool. Yeah. They're young. It's a passion project. They're just getting off the ground, and a lot of people are talking about them.
Russian duck, what is that? Where does that come from?
Russian duck comes from his grandfather. It's a story. They grew up in Harrison, New Jersey. And a duck is actually a metal pail, post-prohibition era, that they would take to the local bars and breweries, because at that time you could fill up pretty much anything full of beer. So his grandfather and his friends called it a duck. An act of getting that filled, like if you lost a game of cards, was you have to go rush the duck. Yeah, and we started last August. So we're about 11 months old now. Yeah.
Now, is this policy in effect at your brewing company, if I come with a bucket?
If it has a cap. No open containers.
We have 3 year-round styles. We have our Naysayer Pale Ale here, which is our kind of our flagship. We also have a coffee porter and an English strong ale. And then we rotate. We have a couple double IPAs. We'll have one of the two available at any one time. And then we kind of do a seasonal beer, depending on what the temperature is outside.
I got to ask you about the elemental tattoo. Does that have... anything to do with your formula?
This is a compound called myrcene, and it's responsible for giving hoppy beers a citrusy flavor.
Oh, that is so cool.
Yeah. It's going to be the first of a whole beer-themed sleeve.
Awesome.
Yeah.
I love a beer tattoo. I don't have one yet, but I'm going to see how the afternoon goes. I'm feeling inspired.
So in addition to all the fabulous beer we consumed, there was also great food at the event, and I had the privilege of going behind the line with the grill master to check out what he was cooking up.
This is Jen Tulloch with The Morning After here at the New York Food and Beer Expo. I'm behind the line. There's some serious grilling going on back here.
We got a bratwurst
Cheers.
Happening.
We got bratwurst happening. What else is going over here? We got grilled corn.
Flying Pig Farms.
Beautiful.
Yeah, we try to figure out how to keep them on the grill and keep them nice and plump and moist without drying out because, you know, who knows what's going on here in terms of timing.
Yeah.
It's impossible to time anything here on the grill. And so we got a little hotel pan. We got some Brooklyn beer. There's a summer pale ale, which is dry hopped with some lemon in it. It's really, really nice, really, really refreshing. Put a little pan in, filled it up with beer, put the sausage, the bratwurst in the beer, and then taking it out of the beer and then grilling it just to finish it up. It's a fabulous little thing. Rick's Picks Fat Beets grilled on a burger.
Oh.
Phenomenal, phenomenal, phenomenal. We're having a lot of fun here today.
That looks beautiful.
Playing with everything that's going around here. Yeah, there's a, you know, we're trying to figure out something to do with the Peekskill Simply Sour, which is just... fabulous and refreshing beer here today.
That will be delicious.
So, yeah, no, we're having a lot of fun, except when we're running into each other. Is that the corn, Divya? Okay. Yeah. So we're still working on a bratwurst, or no, not?
You have the bratwurst.
Cheeseburger and 2 corn.
New York Food and Beer Expo, a fabulous event. Big ups to Jimmy Carbone, who not only co-sponsored the event, but served as an amazing host to us. We can't wait to be there again next year. Thank you, Jimmy. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we are going to revisit my favorite place and yours, Chardonnay's, here in the Morning After.
More Dead Stars on the Morning After. Stay tuned. HeritageRadioNetwork.org. Everything you do is not for you. Disappearing views of someone else's state of grace. Well, I know you're disappointed. I get angry when you move. There's a force that's out of focus, but it
we're back here on the Morning After on Heritage Radio. So it's about that time. We've given you enough time to prepare. It's about that time to go to my favorite restaurant and yours, that mythical place that celebrates all bad food and wine trends from years past. What's on the menu at Chardonnay's?
Ooh, uh-huh. What's on the menu at Chardonnay's?
So we here at The Morning After don't like to get too political, but I've been thinking a lot about the unrest that's occurring currently in Russia due to the gay propaganda legislation and feeling a lot for the people that are suffering because of it. And I wanted to take a brief glimpse into the future. I wanted to take a brief glimpse into a brighter, rosier future in Russia, and thus would like to invite you to a wedding in Russia 15 years in the future. May I have some techno music, Joe?
Nasrovia, Nasrovia to Nikita and Anatoly. I am your host, DJ Saksuani, spinning all your fabulous club favorites tonight. We've got Ananushka Pierzova with her number one hit, Dizzy, Dizzy, Dizzy. Moscow favorite, Andrei Bonbon, with song that always keeps us dancing, Can You Touch This? I Don't Think So. And finally, touching tribute by Anatoly's sister Anastasia of Celine Dion number one hit, Power of Loving. You're not wanting to miss this. Tonight's menu of foods, specially cooked by Nikita's babushka Nina, includes following food items. Pickled cucumber spears with sallow and fermented cabbage, yum yum. Pickled herring with cucumber and black bread, oh boy. Pickled tomatoes and dill. Potatoes. Potatoes. Potatoes, potatoes, potatoes. Just plain dill on plate with tiny spoon and shot of vodka. Another shot of vodka. Pickled vodka. Potato vodka. And finally, block of farmer's cheese with fried buns and vodka. It looks like everyone is getting into the fabulous spirit tonight. Uncle Anton appears to be kissing an ice sculpture shaped like the David. And there's Cousin Sonia, putting the dirt and dirty dancing with what appears to be one of the female cooks. Get it, Sonia. Go on with yourself. Oh no, Nikita. I see the way you're looking at the best man Edward Snowden. Hands off, Khrushchev chick. Hands off. You're all looking beautiful tonight. Keep dancing. Keep loving. Keep drinking vodka. Keep dancing.
It's a great party.
I want to go to the future.
I can't wait to go to that gay Russian wedding.
It's been a great show. Thank you so much to Joy Wang for coming by.
Thanks so much for having me.
Let's go have a beer.
Let's do it.
This is The Morning After. Excellent. On heritageradionetwork.org.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website, or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.